Well, it wouldn't be a day at Sundance if we didn't get to talk to a couple folks involved in the making of one of the great films that it made its Did the premiere already happen? Did we miss the premiere of Saturday?
It happened last night.
Darn
Remember
it.
we talked to the director yesterday. He told us such things. Sheila Coleman and John Gibbons are here with us. They could talk a little bit about the film itself and what 25 years ago and that disaster, that tragedy meant and what lasting impact it's had on the city of Liverpool and Liverpool football fans. Welcome. Welcome stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How did it go last night, first and foremost?
Very well. It was well received, and it was actually quite there's humor in it as well as it being a very sad topic, and we were a little bit concerned around the humor, but it was understood and well received.
Yeah, it was great applause afterwards at Packed Out Theatre, and lots of people have said already that they really want to see it, and I think it's sold out every show across Sundance, which is phenomenal for, you know, a story which is local to us. You know, to resonate so much with people over here is wonderful.
Now, we found out yesterday, and I probably should have known this already, that a film like this and anything basically relating to the Hillsborough tragedy, it's kind of banned. Right, in Liverpool.
Well, it's just at the moment in the UK. I mean, Sheila will be able to talk more about this than me, but there's a big court case going at the moment. Finally, after as you say, 25 years, it's finally got to court, and people are finally, you know, being, you know, held up to what's happened.
I think the thing is that essentially there's the inquest verdicts, which originally returned verdicts of accidental death. It was part and parcel of the cover-up that occurred. They were quashed finally in 2012 and new inquests ordered. So whilst these new inquests are on, we've been told it's very restricted what we can say, what we can write about. I've just had a chapter pulled in a book because I'm likely to get hauled up before the coroner. I have a particular view on that I think we're being policed, we're being gagged, and
censored
it's part
a
of the
bit, right?
Yeah,
it's part of the process of once the establishment we caught the establishment out. They don't like that. It took us 23 years to do that. Once the establishment's caught out, it very quickly reorganizes to protect its own, and I feel that's what's happening now. Because what people need to realize is this disaster, going back to 1989, there was the thousands and thousands of witnesses, ordinary football supporters who were there. It was a televised event, so you saw people watch the disaster unfold, and yet in spite of all that evidence, in spite of a public inquiry which stated the cause of the disaster was the breakdown of police control, no one has ever been prosecuted, and accidental death verdicts. It was probably one of the biggest, it was certainly the biggest sporting cover-up, but it was one of the biggest cover-ups by the establishment over the last 30 years in England.
It's hard for us to fathom that here stateside, because you would never see it just wouldn't be stood for. Is this unusual in England, or does this happen in other cases
it happens? What I think is unusual is the tenacity, and I think it goes to the heart of us being Scousers, being from Liverpool. We're a very diverse city. We're a port, so we're a real mix of ethnic origins, Irish, Afro-Caribbean, anyone who came in. So we're that mixture, and with that comes a real strength and a real kind of bloody-mindedness that we will not let go. And this story, it's important because it's just a grassroots campaign which wouldn't give up.
Yeah,
we just stuck to our guns.
I think another context that Americans might kind of not struggle to get their head around, but should be made aware of, it is the condition of football stadiums in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Absolutely appalling. You know, people caged in because they were, you know, concerned about what these people would do. And, you know, you go to American sports stadiums and the facilities are fantastic, and everyone's treated like, you know, customers who you want to kind of, you know, have a you know, fantastic experience. At that point, you know, football clans were seen as second, third class citizens, and it was just get them in and get them away.
Not only that,
possible.
John, it was actually within police operational orders. It was animal terminology.
Yeah.
They were corralled from the railway station and herded into pens, and that was the language used within the operational orders. And yes, you herd people like cattle into pens, and that's how people were crushed to death.
We didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday. It did happen 25 years ago, and it's been apparently very much a part of Liverpool's kind of collective consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, though, you've got players playing for the club now who are younger than this tragedy was, right? Guys that weren't even alive when it happened. A lot of football fans in England now attending those same games who weren't even alive when this happened, so they don't have kind of those firsthand memories. Does that make this story that much more important to tell?
I would think so, because it's passed down. It's like, you know, in England, we've had a boycott of a newspaper, the Sun newspaper, for this is the 26th year of the boycott because of the appalling headlines of lies and the abuse it gave us. And that legacy is passed down, that kids know that no one in the family would read the Sun. Liverpool kids know. And what is really always kind of, from us, from a campaign point of view, is always heartening, is when young people come in and want to know about it. And I think this film, for me, having been so hands-on for so many years, I found it very moving, just that the innocence of childhood and the compassion in children. And Mike, who made the film, just portrays that beautifully with the two boys, and you see them in their football shirts, and the two major football teams in Liverpool and Everton, one red, one blue, and that image of the poster for it is so powerful, the compassion that we come together as a city, and that is the thing that's made it. I think other cities might have just given up because we took on the state. We had nothing except a real sense of injustice and truth. And every time it shut a door, we'd find another way of getting around it.
John, did a movie like this have to be made by somebody from Liverpool? I mean, because Mike's from there. I mean,
yeah.
Did you sense, could you get a sense that he grew up, he was part of it? Because I'm sure others have reported on it. There was a tremendous documentary that ESPN did called the 30 for 30 documentary. And we'll get your thoughts on that in a minute. But did this film need to be done by somebody with ties to Liverpool or somebody from the community?
I think so, yeah. I think it does really help. I think Mike's been as respectful as he could be in terms of getting as many people on board. He came and spoke to us at the Anfield Wrap. He spoke to the local newspapers, and he's been really, really careful to make sure he's told the story that he wants to tell, but also that reflects the kind of city and the supporters. I think he's done a fantastic job, so credit goes to him. But yeah, I do think it needs to be, and there's other little things as well, like the star, if you like, the young boy who's in it, him, his dad was actually at Hillsborough, so there's nice connections there as well. So, but yeah, no, I do agree.
What did the two of you make of the documentary that was shown here, obviously stateside, but you'd have to get a pirated version in the UK?
Well, interestingly enough, this is part of the gagging thing. It couldn't be shown. But the irony is we could pick it up by people putting the link on forums and stuff. And it was so important because obviously what it said was stuff I've researched and worked on for years, and Phil's great new features in it that I worked on. We worked together on the initial stuff, and we produced the first critical accounts after, because I monitored all the legal proceedings after Hillsborough in the early days. So there was that, and so it was good to see a really well-made piece of film that actually was telling the truth, because we've never been able to do that, because we've done bits of it, but we've always kind of had the blocks put on us. And there you have the ultimate irony, when we can see it here, we can't see it in England, yet we can see it again. We have to go round the back for it, and it's just the hypocrisy of it is immense. It really is.
Yeah, but I'm just thrilled that ESPN made it.
Yes.
Because it just
so important.
It is, and I think a lot of sports fans are kind of aware of the tragedy and kind of maybe heard little bits and maybe little bits of untruths that are put out there by people, and so the fact that as many people as possible who hear the truth and can hear what really happened and can make decisions for themselves based on the facts, is wonderful. So, thanks to ESPN for doing that.
I was 19 years old when it happened. And what I remember, it wasn't a big story on ESPN at the time, but it made the national news. And it was a tragedy in England. But I remember the reporting being, at the time there was still the hooligan label.
Yeah, sure.
It was the drunks. It was the hooligans. Mm-hmm. There was no talk of the authorities or the stadium folk being at fault. It was too many drunkards trying to pile into an area, and that was the initial reporting in 1989 here stateside. And obviously subsequently we found out that's not the case, but I think that was the, I don't know if propaganda is the right word, but that was the message.
It is the right word.
That was the context. I mean, Hillsborough was always viewed within the context of hooliganism, and it was also, it has to be seen within the context of a very right-wing government at the time. Margaret Thatcher was the prime minister, and anything north of Watford, we were, in the north of England. Liverpool had a very negative reputation. So you put all those together and you can present that lie. That propaganda becomes very powerful, very strong. And it was, you could report it here that way, because that was the message being sent out from England.
So we know there's another inquest happening right now, right? What's it going to to take? Obviously, there should be a legacy of this to improve stadium safety moving forward in that, but what's it going to take to kind of put this to bed in terms of healing the community and all the negative feelings and the, I guess, the injustice? What's it going to take in England from a socio-political standpoint, whatever it is, from a justice standpoint, to kind of put the Hillsborough tragedy to rest?
Well, I think, you know, that is the pertinent question. I think it's so important because that's all families have ever requested, is accountability and responsibility. And I have seen so many families who lost their children die along the way because they've neglected their own health in terms of fighting a campaign for justice. And so you feel you owe it to them. And people aren't vindictive. And I think it's worth pointing out, you know, these families and survivors, they weren't, you know, extreme politicos. They were just ordinary working class families in the main who had a terrible tragedy before them. And instead of being able to mourn their dead, they had to actually defend their dead because their dead were seen as somehow complicit in their own deaths, hence the taking of blood alcohol levels, even in a 10-year-old boy. And where there were no blood alcohol levels, the police accessed the police national database to see if people had criminal records. This was a distinct attempt to criminalize the victims. In terms of what it will take, I think we would like from these inquests a verdict which goes to the heart of why these people died. It was a distinct lack of care, and the responsibility lay firmly with South Yorkshire Police, a notorious police force, by the way, in terms of how they previously policed the miners' strike in England. So now we have evidence, and we have very good lawyers who are challenging the police that are still alive on these issues that they lied. We have the original statements, the statements that have been altered, fan statements were altered. I mean, the abuse and the extent of the cover-up is extreme, and what people want is accountability. They don't... I doubt if anyone will ever go to prison. I really do. I don't even know on a personal level if I would want that. What I want is for the legacy to be that we live in a more open and transparent society where that won't happen again.
Well, the short film is called Saturday. It's worth checking out. It's been well received. We've had the pleasure of talking to a lot of folks involved in the film. Fascinating story, and yeah, one that, you know, like Bill said, it got news here when it happened, and the ESPN 30 for 30 kind of brought it back to light stateside, but a lot of us just don't know a lot about it, so very much looking forward to the artistic examination.
But thanks very much for having us, and I just say, if people listening do want to find out more about it, the website saturdayshortfilm.com. Saturdayshortfilm.com if they want to check it out and find out more. It's all there.
John, Sheila, thank you for coming
thank
on
you.
With us.
Thank you so for much. Inviting
enjoy your,
us.
Enjoy your trip here to Park City.
Thank you
we
very
are
much.
So far. Thank you
so much.